together, talked about being so free.
Welcome to With Milk and Sugar, UK edition,
where we drink coffee with people so you can get to know them.
We are now in our last part of our podcast recordings from the UK.
This time we went to Reading to meet Tom, the youngest council member of the Lib Dems ever, I think it was.
At least in Bracknell, yes.
And that was super interesting because it was... I'm not going to tell the story now because you're going to listen to it in the episode, but how we met Tom, or how you, Brenda, met Tom originally.
Really meeting Tom, I met him the first time with you.
Yeah, true. But how we got in touch with him.
The funny thing about that episode is, and that's a story only I can tell, is that actually we changed the setting a little because... Christiane's job at the council in Austria, and so we said, okay, we have two politicians or two council members from different countries, and that's going to be interesting how we do things and how things are same or different.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a very good position there.
Yeah, I had quite an unusual one for me.
A hot seat one.
But I was very, very impressed by Tom and his work that he does. And I was also very impressed by all three of us that the Brexit word never came up, really.
Yeah. And we have to say, we went to UK a couple of days before the elections.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, we didn't talk.
We talked a bit about it, but not a lot.
Yeah. Tom was really great. It was a very long recording,
mm-hmm.
but it was very motivating and very interesting. And yeah, just listen to it.
Welcome back to our podcast, Mit Milch und Zucker, or as I call it for now, With Milk and Sugar. We're back in London, near London,
yeah.
Almost. Let's say London, so nobody gets confused.
It's Reading.
It's Reading.
It's very confusing because Reading is written like Reading.
Yeah.
Yes.
So a lot of, like, when there's sports things in Austria about Reading, it's always Reading, which I find really funny.
Yeah, but we're back in Reading. And it's me, Christiane. I'm here again. Brenda is also with me again. And our guest today is Thomas. Hi.
Hello.
Thomas is 22 years old and he's a council member for the Liberal Democrats in...
Bracknell Forest.
And and what we are going to talk about with you, Brenda is going to tell you that.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, we have one theme for all the people we interview in the UK. So, but we have like specific undertones for every person. But the main theme is... tea time, what I love about the UK.
Okay.
Because like loving your country or being proud of it also consists of being critical about it and standing up and doing something. And that's what we're going to talk about, because you're a council member in a town where my granddad used to live. So you met my mom through door knocking, and I love to talk about door knocking. let's exchange stories
about knocking on doors.
How many people do open their doors in their underwear?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that happens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I mean, the thing is, it's a lot colder here than I guess it would be even in your summer. So like, you know, you tend to not get that in the winter months or in autumn.
Oh,
we
get it all the time.
Okay, but in the summer, like when it was getting close to the sort of election time, that happened, and it was just like, okay, bye.
And yeah, that's the story behind how we met. We met actually today in the train station, but you met part of my family. And
indeed.
Yeah, and there's another story with Bracknell and politics, but we're going to talk about that later.
Oh, okay.
and the important and interesting thing is that Christiane and you have the same position in the political system, so we thought it might be interesting to exchange stories and ideas and how things work.
Right. But let's start with the questions to go so we can shortly get into your mindset. Okay, I will start. What statistics for your life would you most like to see?
do you know what? I do a lot of traveling around for work and things like that. So I would honestly want to know how often I spend, like, either sat in traffic or waiting at train stations because of some kind of delay. I reckon we're talking over the course of a year, like days.
What's one responsibility you really wish you didn't have?
I'll tell you what, one of the things that's at the moment that's getting me, I have to, for work, organise our Christmas party. And I'll tell you what, the council stuff, the job, the exams, none of that has been as stressful as organising the Christmas party.
But there's a Christmas friend right there.
Yeah,
but oh, no one wants to go to that because, like, it's right next to the office, so we've all seen it.
Okay.
Next question. What's your favourite smell?
Favourite smell? That's a good one. In terms of, like, if we're just talking general, right, I quite like the smell of sort of coffee granules. But if we're talking about, like, those candles and things like that, I always like the fresh linens or clean cottons kind of things. Yeah, that's the best one.
If all jobs had the same pay and hours, what job would you like to have?
Do you know what? Honestly, it would be some of the stuff that I do with the council, that kind of stuff. You know, that is paid very small, but if I could do that and it would be paid the same as anything, that kind of role, you know, being in the community and doing that sort of stuff that I end up doing, which is very vast, but we'll talk about that later.
Which place in the UK should everybody visit at least once?
Bath.
Waiting to go there. Yeah. I really, really want to go there.
It's one of those places that you get off the train at the train station and immediately all the architecture and everything is just like, oh my god.
Yeah,
and it gets the right balance between being, it's not too busy, but there's loads of stuff to do there.
Yeah, true.
And I used to live in Bristol when I was at university, and Bath was always the place I'd go because you can always find, there's just some like random things, like there's an Asian museum there that you would never know was there unless you like really looked it up, and it's just in some house that's been converted, and it's just great to go there and see all that. But yeah, I'd say Bath 100%.
What is your favourite British food and drink?
Fish and chips for the food, you know, everyone loves fish and chips. And the drink, I'm quite boring, I don't drink alcohol, so I can't say any of those things, so I'm going to be really boring and just go with, you know, a breakfast tea, English breakfast tea.
Which stereotype about the UK is completely true and which one is completely wrong?
In terms of true, so I don't know if this is a stereotype that all the UK say, but we are quite socially awkward in the UK. Like, in terms of, you know, people are walking around in, like, the towns or something, they'll always try and avoid eye contact with people. And also the thing where if you bump into someone, everyone's like, oh, sorry, 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 even if you don't need to say sorry. One that's completely false. Oh, that's good. I'm not too good on British stereotypes. What? One that's completely false. American people always talk about the British people have really bad teeth thing from when it was, you know, back in like the George Washington times. But I don't know, I've never noticed that people in Britain are particularly bad at
That's a really good one.
Yeah.
I would have never thought about it. But yeah, true. Mm. Americans do say that. And you see it in like different TV shows. Yeah.
I've never noticed.
Like with The Simpsons, when they put a British character, it always had really weird teeth.
Yeah.
I think the biggest negative stereotype of the UK in Austria, which is completely untrue, is the food stereotype.
Well, the food is terrible.
No, it isn't.
The best thing about Britain is that you can get all sorts of other foods. You know, every like shopping parade has an Indian restaurant or a Chinese, so you can go to those kind of places.
So the last question goes:
I'm thankful for. I would say my friends. I've got really good friends, and they're very supportive because I, you know, as we've been discussing, I got a lot of stuff that's going on in terms of just being busy with work, house, and everything. And my friends are really good at sort of, you know, taking note of that and making sure that they're keeping an eye on me to make sure I'm not going too crazy on my workload and still spending time on myself and stuff like that. So that's what I'm really thankful for.
So we're finished with the questions to go. You did well, very well. I think we have a lot of topics to go through. But now starting with our usual first question, and that is, what is or was a good coffee for you? Not just how it tasted, but who you drank it with and stuff like that. Why it was so special.
So there's a coffee shop in Woking, which is a town between Reading and Bracknell, that used to be called Oscar's until really recently, and then it became Oscar's Coffee because it got a new owner. And very recently I've been doing night shifts with work based on the assignments I've been doing. And I went there, it must have been about midday. So for me, that was like the very start of the day, and I was still a bit tired from the night before. But I went there with my friend. It was just a pretty plain sort of coffee with a little bit of milk in there. But it was just so desperately needed there. And I was in good company with my friend Tom. So yeah, that was really nice. And we got to sit by the window seat and Wokingham now, they've got their Christmas lights up, big Christmas tree. So it was just a nice setting and a very desperately needed coffee.
People watching.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. You've got to do a bit of that. If you're at the sort of window seat in a coffee shop, you've got to look out and do some people watching.
Do you think it would be more appropriate to ask in England to ask the question, what is or was a good tea for you?
You know, I don't drink that much tea, honestly. Like, it's odd. I'd say that's a bad stereotype about Britain, actually, because the thing is, I don't, a lot of people my age, I don't know, they just don't seem to drink as much tea. But if you talk to older people in the UK, then they're already on their fourth tea by the time you chat to them.
Yeah. The funny thing is, when my mum, when she drinks a lot of tea when she's here, and she takes home the tea bags, but she always says in Austria it doesn't taste the same. So she doesn't drink tea.
That's true. I heard that a lot of times, that the tea in Britain tastes better, kind of, than... Even when you use the same teas, tea bags, I think it has something to do with the water, maybe.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't talk about water in Austria.
Oh, no.
It's a very, very...
In a liberal context, that's not good.
Yeah. So, you met my mum when you were did dog walking for your election campaign, right?
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah?
She was one of my... She was actually the first... it was like... We split our... door knocking into walks, and I was doing one on my own, and I had never done that road before, and I just thought, right, first door I'm gonna knock, and then this absolutely lovely lady answers the door, and she's like, oh, you're a liberal, and I was like, yeah, and she was like, do you know Nails? And I was like, yeah, I do. And then it was just like this small world, and it just was like a really great conversation, but it set up the rest of the door knocking to be really positive, because I was sort of like going in, I was a bit nervous because it's one of those parts of the ward that I just didn't know anything about because I hadn't been there before. And then I was like, wow, these people are really nice. So that's how I met you through that.
Yeah.
It was just a really interesting, very small world experience.
Yeah, my mum called me right after and was like, you know what happened now? No. But yeah, it was interesting. And the funny thing is that you knocked on one of the doors in this where my granddad used to live. I would have guessed she's more on the Labour side.
Okay.
Or Green, probably Green.
Uh-huh.
But that door knocking you did changed her mind.
Excellent.
Yeah. And the thing is, I think when you use the door knocking, it's always good when you have like positive moments. I mean, people, when you get a nice conversation and you get topics to do, or things like, okay, I could change that.
I think door knocking is one of the hardest things to do during elections, because you're always like at the first door, you always have to like jump over your shadow. I don't know if you say it like that in English. But because you're, in the beginning, it always feels like you're intruding in someone's home. But in general, people are really, really nice. And they're happy that someone's there and listening to them, especially when it's not during elections.
Hmm.
But sometime during the actual work that politicians should do.
Yeah, I mean, my door knocking campaign, it was really odd because the ward I live in, we had never really, as in the Lib Dems, had never really gone close to it before. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of... I knocked on my first door. It's in a road called Swaledale, and I remember it very well because the first person I knocked on their door, they shouted at me and told me to, you know, all sorts of things I'm not going to repeat on the podcast. But that was a bad experience for the first door. But then as I started going around Swaledale and talking to people, like you say, the issues that they were bringing up, because I mean, when I started, I didn't know if I was even going to be a candidate. I was just doing it because I wanted to sort of see what it was like. And when people started telling me about these things that were wrong in their street, or that they had tried to report stuff through the council and they were just getting ignored, and they tried to report to their councillor and they weren't getting back to them, I just thought, do you know what? Someone needs to do something about this, because, you know, these are people that are my neighbours, effectively, and they're not getting a good deal. And so that, for me, is how I got involved. But it's through door knocking that you find out. And you find out so much about... Because even though I the street I live in, you know, there's one across the road that I was knocking on people's doors, and they were telling me issues that I didn't even know were problems in the community. And And the only way you can find out is by getting out there and going and talking to people. Because you can put leaflets through people's doors, but you don't get anything back out.
Yeah, true.
Even if they start, you know, if you have a little cut-off slip that they, you know, you end up just getting people come back at you with moaning then. But if you knock on their door and you have those conversations, they, like you say, they see, especially if it's outside of election time, they see that you actually care and you want to come and listen to, mm-hmm. to the kind of things that they have on their plate and that they want to get sorted.
True, true.
But we're already right into the politics, but you're quite young. As a politician. Even I'm quite young as a politician. And I'm 27, which is not that young. But how did you How did you start to be interested in politics? Or what made you start like
be involved?
Yeah.
That's a good question. So I've always sort of had this interest. I used to watch the news a lot when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, Tony Blair was our Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm.
And when I would see him on the screen, I didn't understand the underlying, you know, I didn't know what Labour was or what it meant, how he was elected. But I just used to see him on the TV and think, okay, this guy's quite important, you know, I want to hear what he's got to say and what kind of things are going on. And then in 2010, there was the first ever in the UK televised debate between back then it was Gordon Brown, Nick Clegg and David Cameron, and
that was an interesting group of people.
And back then I watched that, and again I didn't really understand the underlying kind of policies because I was even younger back then, but I just sort of I watched how Nick Clegg presented himself and the way he answered the questions, and I thought, okay, I quite like the things that he's saying. And then I was sort of following it in the background, and then the 2015 election we had a local candidate in Bracknell called Patrick Smith. And he was just, that he was talking about things locally, and I could put that into perspective a lot more, because I'm someone that I describe myself as being involved more because of local issues rather than national politics. And Patrick was just such a great candidate, and Nick was still the leader of Lib Dems back then. So I just thought, you know, I'll help him out. And I did some leafleting. I didn't do door knocking at that stage, but I was helping out, and I just kind of got involved. And then in 2017, the local party had this sort of, they needed volunteers basically to do lots of different things, and I thought, well, you know what, Bracknell is so far gone to the Conservatives. At that point we had 41 Conservative councillors and one Labour councillor and no one else, and so I thought, well, you know, I need to help change that. I can't sort of sit back. And then, like I say, in 2018, it was like at the start of 2018, January 2018, that's when I knocked on those doors in Swaledale. And then I went home and I just sort of thought about everything. So I'd spoken to probably about, I'd done 50 doors or so. It was quite a small little thing. But I just kind of thought, do you know what, I'm in a position where I can do something to help in the community here. And I should probably look into this. And then, you know, you kept knocking on doors, keep knocking on doors. And honestly, on that election day, I remember saying, actually, when the polls closed, my friend Becca, who helped so much in the campaign, I remember saying to her, I really don't think we've done it, because it was never really a seat that was even
open. Really open.
Yeah, it was you know, historically a Labour Conservative marginal, with UKIP having a really strong presence. So it was like, where is there room for the Lib Dems there? And then I remember just watching those ballots come in, and I was just like, wow, people are actually putting across my box. I'm so honoured. But yeah, that was my sort of story. It started, you know, just from seeing the news, and then, you know, through the debate, and then our local candidate, Patrick Smith, really did get me involved, and he was our candidate again in 2017, and so that's the first election I really properly got involved in and went out and knocked on doors and that kind of thing.
Some people on this table had a little emotional evening on our election.
Emotional. I was a wreck. It was horrible. I think it was one of the most horrible evenings of my entire life, because in the 11th district, well, we have quite a strong right-wing kind of party situation in Austria in general, but especially in our district, and the district turned from being Labour for, I don't know, over 20 years to being right-wing. And that was the first thing that came up, and we were just like, oh God, that can't be happening. And then our polls got in, and it was always like between, we have one seat, we have two seats, we have one seat, we have two. And I was the second seat, and I was emotionally way under the table. And it was just, I cried so much. I didn't think I cried more at any point of my life than during that night.
And it was so funny, because every, like, a lot of people of our party came up and were like,
you're going to make it. Calm down. It's all going to be all right. But it was such emotional because we started our election campaign with the European elections 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked quite consistently until the elections end of 2015.
Yeah.
Like door knocking.
Being on the street, talking to people constantly.
Every week.
Yeah.
For a year. And you're working up to the moment. And it's like, hopefully that helps. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you got your seat with 90 votes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really good. And we're the first two Liberal seats in our district too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was the first Liberal Democrat elected to Bracknell Forest Borough Council in about a decade. And I was the first ever Lib Dem for my seat. And then I got, that's at the borough level. And I was also elected to the town council at the same time. And I was actually the first ever Liberal Democrat elected to Bracknell's town council. And so, because that happened, so the count for that happened afterwards, so we had the count at midnight and they messed up my count really badly. So I was feeling those emotions. So the way it works in Britain is you have in our seats there are two people from each party on the ballot because you're electing two councillors and it's first past the post, but you get two votes. They had a box for Labour votes, so if you voted to Labour they had a box, Conservative they had a box, Lib Dem they said you're not going to get in many votes anyway, so we'll just put you in the other box, which is where, you know, if you vote for one Labour, one Conservative or whatever. And so we were going through the night and this other box was just piling up because it had my votes and everyone else's votes in there. And it was really bizarre. And I didn't believe that I'd actually done it, even though like there were all of our team were watching the count and they had shown me the maths on paper and they were like,
same here.
They were like, you can't not do it now.
Yeah.
Even though there are 50 votes to go, even if all of them went against you, you can't not do it. And I was
nope.
I'm going to wait until they literally say you've been elected.
Yeah.
And then the next day when we had the town council election, I was in the same level of shock, even though I was like, these are the same voters, then, you know, surely it would just translate. But as the votes were coming in, I was like, what's happening? How has this happened? And then, you know, it was two very emotional things. I remember actually on election day, it was a really horrifically busy day for me.
Yeah.
I had two exams. It was my university final exam. And that was in Bristol. So I had to drive to Bristol. I left at about 6 o'clock in the morning. I sat two exams and then I came home for about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then I just knocked on doors until 10 p.m. until the polls closed.
Really, you do door on election day?
Yeah. So what we do is we find the folks that I'm definitely going to vote for you, and we just kind of say, you know,
did you already?
Today's election day. Have you gone out and voted? Yes. We put it on the system, and it tells us if our voters are coming through. So we had a like ops room that sounds very technical, but actually it was just a guy on a laptop at our chairman's house. And he said he predicted the election result when the polls closed. He said, I think you've just done it in Wild Ridings based on the amount of people that have said they voted, and I think in Sandhurst we've fallen just short, and he was spot on.
Okay.
So it was an interesting day, but I was very tired.
Especially with being the first Liberal council member, it's a lot of expectations and a lot of responsibility. How do you deal with that?
It's an interesting one because I have almost accidentally become the face of the Lib Dems locally because of, you know, the fact that I'm the only representative for the Lib Dems on any sort of local government in Bracknell. And I take it very seriously. I make sure that, you know, when big issues come up, that I try and think about how it might impact other areas as well as my own, because I've kind of got to be that Liberal voice for people across the community. And one of the things we had recently was there was this Horseshoe Lake project in Sandhurst that was a really big issue for those residents. It's not actually in my ward, but I made sure that I went and spoke to people there to try and understand what the issues were and get involved, because actually they need that opposition voice, because even though we've got Labour members on the council, they represent a very specific area as well. It's parts of the town that traditionally have always voted Labour. So to try and make sure that the local press have given me this column in local paper, I think that's pretty smart.
That's cool.
considering it's just one of me, but I make sure I use that as well to try and get sort of issues across that not just because they paint Liberal Democrats in a good light, because that's not what it's about, but it's just making sure that I'm being aware of that. So in the first column I talked about how people need to work together across the community, if that's with the police force, housing associations, and I've just used my Christmas column to talk about a big issue in our community, which is social isolation, which where mm-hmm. especially older folks, you know,
yeah.
you know, they don't have that many people around anymore. And so actually I've got a list of people that I've spoken to part of door knocking mm-hmm. that I've sort of thought, well, you know, I'll go and check on them near Christmas. And so I've used my columns to talk about that, and I'm looking forward to doing that as well.
That's
so,
nice.
Yeah.
But we jumped ahead a little in the story
mm-hmm.
because we're right into politics now. But what's your agenda, or what's your responsibility as a council member? What can you do as a council member? Let's say that.
So Bracknell's interesting, Bracknell Forest. We're a unitary authority, which means in Britain you tend to have two layers of local government.
Okay.
You have the county council, which looks after the kind of bigger things normally. It would look after roads, it would look after some of those bigger projects around social care and things like
mm-hmm.
that. And then you usually have a borough council, which is a bit or district council as they tend
mm-hmm.
to call it. And the district council here would look after things like the bins and, you know, all this day-to-day stuff, planning. But being a unitary authority, we've got everything.
Okay.
And we've got all the responsibilities. So as a councillor, I have to answer to resident queries about, you know, it could be anything. But I also have to, the way that local government has sort of moved in the UK is that it tends to be the council is there, but the services are provided by companies or partners and things like that. So I have to be this sort of liaison between my residents and some of those
mm-hmm.
places, which can be difficult at times if they don't like to answer my emails. But yeah, other than that, I sit on the planning committee. So I go and do site visits to go and look at, you know, when they're proposing developments, about
mm-hmm.
if they're fair. My big thing on the planning committee is always, I'm the guy that always asks the questions about what we call highway safety. So are pedestrians safe? Are vehicles
mm-hmm.
going to be safe moving in and out of the sites? Because no one seems to ask questions about that, but it's a really important thing. And so I do that. But I'm also on the scrutiny panel. We've just changed the way that it works in Bracknell Forest. So I used to be on the Environment, Culture and Communities panel, which looked at everything that wasn't social care education. So it looked at literally all the other stuff.
Yeah.
And now I am I don't even know what you'd call it. I'm part of the pool of members that can be on scrutiny panels. They've changed how it works. And so the first one I'm looking at next quarter is burials. So I look at all sorts of weird and wonderful things. But on the town council, I've got no responsibilities apart from on the full council because they didn't appoint me to any committees. So.
Okay. And how does it work? So, for example, you go door knocking, somebody says the light in the street is damaged or we need more light there. How does it work for you?
Before I was on the council, it was just campaigning and trying to get them to change it. But now that I'm on the council, it depends on the issue. If it's something, because it's quite complicated in some parts of Britain with how the land ownership works. So let's say lighting, that's something the council definitely does. It's a key issue for me because it's a big problem in my ward. I would go to, you know, the people in the council that are responsible and say, look, what can we do here? What's the issue in front
mm-hmm.
of us? But if it's working with partners, it gets a bit more complex, but
mm-hmm.
I can still get things done. So for instance, we had one recently where there was a garage block that used to be owned by the council but it's now owned by the housing association, and people were fly tipping in this, you know, chucking a load of
mm-hmm.
rubbish and it was causing a lot of problems because it had just been abandoned basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made sure that Silver Housing Association, that they went in there and sorted it out. They cleaned it out and then now they have boarded it up. But it's issues like that. It's sort of pavement politics, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
And I can link up to these organisations or people within the council and get those things done. But when it comes to some kind of the bigger things like trying to change policy, or, you know, I'm one person in a 42-person council and 38 of them are Conservatives, so very difficult for me to get things done.
Yeah.
But I think my role on scrutiny is where I can really get things done. So if we look at car parking, which is a big problem
mm-hmm.
in Bracknell, we had a debate on it and I was actually able to steer the conversation to look at things like, do we change the residence parking schemes
mm-hmm.
in my ward so that it actually makes sense as to where people live rather than sort of a line on the
mm-hmm.
boundary? And I actually got that done, even though, you know, I'm not someone that can even get policies through because I haven't even got anyone to second my motions. And so the scrutiny panels are where I can move the agenda a little bit, but
it's about the argument, probably not the party.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things you asked about how I act as sort of the only Lib Dem, I try and work as much as I can, you know, with other
mm-hmm.
parties, because I know in reality that's the only way I'm going to get things
mm-hmm.
done.
Yeah.
But you know, you've got to have some lines where they'll propose something you think, no, I'm not going to bat for that. Like if they talk about closing libraries and things like that, that's something that comes up in the budgets for me. I can't support things like that because I know how central our library is to our community and things like that.
True.
So it's difficult navigating it, because there are some things I can, when it's to do with officers in the council, you know, the workforce in the council, I can get things done really well, and I try and get on really well with people in the council, and that's worked really well so far. But then when it comes to those bigger structural things, you know, it's really difficult, but it's just about trying to work with people and
mm-hmm.
see if you can move the dial even an inch is the best one.
But if the thing, I think the thing is, same in Austria, correct me if I'm wrong, as they get, the stories get bigger or
yeah.
emotions get bigger, they get more political.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they get more
yeah.
party lines.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in Austria, in the council where Christiane is, there are 5.5 parties. There are 5 parties and an independent one.
Okay.
And there are in total 60 councillors.
Okay.
So that's quite big.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, when it's about something practical like a lamp or
yeah.
mm-hmm.
or some pavement thing or whatever, it's always not unpolitical. But when it comes to motorcycle,
parking spaces for motorcycles, they can be really political, those discussions, because especially with the Green Party, they are just in general against all of them, because they say we have enough and we need more bicycles, stuff like that. But it, sometimes really weird things where you think, well, that can't be political, because come on, it's a bin or it's a lamp. And sometimes those
yeah.
can be super political, and it's super weird, especially like, for example, if there's a lamp somewhere in a part of the district where it's like a really, really strong right wing kind of thing, and they said no, we can put a light there because it would be bad for the people who live there, because they will be like the light will shine through their windows and we don't want that. But then the other side is like, yeah, but we need the security there, so put a lamp there. It's just really, really, politics can be weird sometimes on that kind of level.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. We have discussions about recycling food waste,
mm-hmm.
which I thought is a fairly straightforward thing.
Same story, we had the same story.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and yet it becomes immediately like, no, you're saying that because you're a liberal, and it's
mm-hmm.
like, no, I'm saying that because I think it's a reasonable idea to recycle food waste.
Yeah,
you know, I didn't come in here with my rosette on to talk about that. It's really odd. And being on the planning committee, I see that a lot as well. You look at a development and you go, okay, this is clearly ridiculous or something. Or even the other way around, you know, this is a very sensible development.
Mm-hmm.
There was one that there was a garage that's been abandoned for like 4 or 5 years,
mm-hmm.
and it exists in a place that has a lot of trees around it, and they want to build 2 houses, and they were reasonable houses, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It would have made use of a site that had nothing on it apart from an abandoned garage that was already all concreted over.
Mm-hmm.
And the councillors that are in the main group,
mm-hmm.
they were like, oh no, we can't build on the green belt. And I was like, this isn't the green belt, it's a concrete.
It's already built on.
But it's because there's a small group of residents in one ward that is particularly friendly
mm-hmm.
to them that doesn't want
yeah.
this to happen, so they all just swing immediately to the extreme position.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, hang on a sec, look at what we've actually got in front of us. But
yeah,
that's gone out the window by that point.
Mm. But when you both, like, it's now a question to both of you.
Ooh.
When you think back, probably 6 or 7 years before you got engaged in the politics, and some people have told you your main focus in your political place would be talking about bins or lights and being very passionate about it.
Mm-hmm.
What would have you said?
I think it's super weird, because back then I would have laughed in their faces.
Mm-hmm.
But now I understand that you can actually be passionate about it, because you start to understand that those issues, no matter how small they are important for people who live there and who have to deal with the issues day by day by day by day, and they get just frustrated with it. And that's just, and sometimes that can be the last bit that makes them go, well, all politicians are the same and they can't even get the bin where I really need it and stuff like that. So you just start getting passionate about recycle bins or lamps or zebra crossings or I don't know what.
Yeah, and I'd say the same. You know, if you'd have asked me years ago, even though I was sort of still interested in local stuff, I would have thought, you know, I'm going to be focused on other things rather than
I'm going to rescue the world.
Yeah, and then I think it's talking to people,
mm-hmm.
isn't it? And actually, when you start hearing from people, like when I was knocking on doors and hearing, you know, I have difficulty crossing this road to get to the main school in Wild Ridings in the morning. Then I start to think, do you know what? There's a reason that we get passionate about
mm-hmm.
these things. It's because it impacts not just that one person, but it'll impact all the people on their road. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of the things I talked about in my, I remember it was in my leaflet as well for the election, I said that my focus was going to be on day-to-day small problems, because actually, mm-hmm. if you collect enough of those up, it makes a big difference to people's lives. Whereas when people just talk about the ideological,
mm-hmm.
political sort of debate,
mm-hmm.
does that really impact people's like lives day-to-day? Whereas if their bin starts getting collected properly, or if their street's clean, or if they've got proper lighting on their street,
mm-hmm.
that has a bigger impact. And then that will impact them
mm-hmm.
in other ways, in terms of, you know, maybe in terms of mental health, they might be happier in where they're living. And that's one of the things I was really passionate about, because the ward I live in is the most deprived ward in Bracknell Forest. It has a very bad reputation in terms of some of the things going on there, and social behaviour and things like that. And I thought, you know what, actually we should be a lot more proud of our community. And if that means that I have to argue with someone for 30 minutes about where a streetlight should go, then that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Because if the end result is people feel proud about where they live,
mm-hmm.
and they feel happier in our community in Wild Runnings, then
yeah,
absolutely great.
I read quite a lot about the renewal project of Tony Blair, what he made, that he put more money into the councils so that all these things can happen. Because, and I thought, when I read that, I thought that was a different world for me to see it like that. To say, okay, if people feel happy or happier where they live, they're going to carry that with them in their political decision. I think that's why local politics are so important, like you both said. The one thing that annoys me, but that's from the Austrian point of view, is you could do it easier and a lot cheaper than we do it now.
Mm.
Because having a district with 90,000 people and having 60 councillors,
it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, and it's expensive. And
so not necessary.
And so not necessary, yeah. Not because the 60 people don't do the work, but the 60 people...
to varying levels.
Whatever. But I think that probably we can get more done if we would bring the politics back, or the local politics back to the people.
Yeah.
And in Austria, like in our council, there are four meetings a year. Four.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That I wish it was that few. I have one a month and then the committees, so I'm constantly in meetings.
Yeah. But I think that's what you've been voted for.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
absolutely.
Yeah, four meetings are like the minimum you've got to have. And we have 23 districts in Vienna, and I don't think in any of them are more than four meetings. And I think that's ridiculous.
There are some,
but I think that's ridiculous, because you get quite a lot amount of money for the work you have to do. And you have a responsibility, and you have been voted for so that you actually do your job, because
mm-hmm.
it is a job. And I don't get... I do have people in all the different parties who I can talk to and who I think do a good work.
Yeah.
Even at the right-wing party, they are people who do their work. I might not agree with their views on the world, but they do their work. And sometimes they even do it good. But that's not the majority. And I think that's a big problem.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, in Bracknell's council, I can, you know, I've only got three parties on there, and I'm basically one of them, but I can look at people from some of the people in the Conservative Party, and I can say, do you know what, you actually really do good work for your
mm-hmm.
community. But there are some people that just show up to the meetings,
mm-hmm.
and they don't say anything at the meetings, they just kind of sit there. And that's kind of frustrating, because, you know, I just think you people have the levers of power, and when there are some injustices that are going on in the community,
yeah.
you just think, step back and think that you could make that change, even if it's small. But there are also people in the Labour Party on that council, I think, John, you work really hard for your community.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's frustrating, like you say, is it's not consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are there because they know they can get voted in, and they like the, I don't know if it's the same in Austria, but they like that the council has some meetings where it's sort of like events in the community, and they can go and say, oh, I'm a councillor.
Yeah.
You know? Whereas I don't even go to those kind of things. I'm more just
mm-hmm.
out there, you know.
Do you get an ID card as a councillor?
I do. I'm wearing it. There you go.
This one. Oh, good.
I do have one as well. But to be fair, I was very happy when I got it. I was like, ooh, I'm a councillor now.
And it always surprises me when people are sort of will say to me, oh, you're a counsellor. But because to me, I just think, you know, I don't see it as being a big thing. I just think I've got this responsibility now rather than I've got this status. But a lot of people do see it as a status, don't they? And that's one of the challenges we kind of have. And and you were talking about, so the question was about sort of, is there a way to do local government better? And in Britain, when I was saying, we sometimes have two layers, the county and the district. That system is rubbish. You know, because if you're a resident, you want it to be easy, don't you? You want to report something to someone, and then it just gets done. Or you find out why it can't get done. But when you've got a county and a district council, you don't know what each one does. I mean, I do, because I, you know...
You're in the system, yeah.
Yeah, and even in our unitary authority, people report stuff to me because they'll think, this is surely the responsibility of the council. And I'll have to say, oh, no, it's the housing association that deal with this. And so then there's delay and it becomes difficult. And I think a lot of money gets spent on these kind of things are actually, if the council just did it, it would be so much easier for everyone involved. But just the way that the local government's gone in Britain, it's really complicated for people to navigate. And that's something I talked about in my last column as well when I was talking about working together. I was like, one of the problems we have is that everyone likes to silo themselves off, and even the housing association will at times like to put a barrier up and say, no, that's your fault kind of thing. But it's like, how about we just sort of put down those barriers and say, look, how do we sort this out? I don't care who, you know, whose responsibility it is. Let's work that out and then fix it, rather than all this sort of, oh no, you have to go through person X and then company Y and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, we have an AMR than you, like the provincial level, and then like in Vienna we have state level, the provincial level, the city level, and the district level.
Mm-hmm.
And the district on its own can't actually do anything.
Yeah,
you always have to, you know, go back to the city level, which is a different party, which makes things difficult because it's a different party.
So in Vienna, your district? Who is it?
In our district, the right-wing party has the majority.
Mm-hmm.
There's
the only district in Vienna.
The only district in Vienna. We have elections next year, so we will see if some of them might. But we still have a big Labour Party in the district who have been in charge for ages before the right-wing came. And then we have the Green Party, which have 3 seats, and the Conservatives, who have 3 seats and one who is kind of there but not really. It's always a bit different.
He was a different party.
Yeah, he was a different party, and then he switched. And then there's 2 liberals. So it's quite divided between Labour left and right wing conservatives. And the good thing is that because they do have a majority, but they don't have like a overall majority, so they always need to talk to someone else to support their things. Both of them do, the right wing party as well as the Labour Party. And so the good thing about, because I always try to find the silver light, silver lining, that's the word, that there's actually room to communicate with the other parties, which isn't the case in other districts where they have like a conservative majority overall and they just do whatever they want.
That's really interesting, because in Britain we have this problem where people look at compromise and working across, you know, party lines as being this kind of dirty thing. Because when we had the coalition government in 2010, that was our chance to say, actually look, when people come together and they work together, you can actually get good stuff done. But instead, people just saw it as an exercise of, oh, they didn't get everything they wanted to do and they voted for things that they wouldn't have voted for if they're on their own, and so it's bad. And then the council, when I say to people, like, I'm going to try and reach across the aisle and get something done, people say, oh, how can you work with them? You know, and it's just like, well, that's not how it should be.
Yeah.
I think our voting system, if like that in the UK, just means that people silo themselves off a bit more. That would be a great situation to be in, where, you know, you have to work
it
with
It is
each
quite
other.
Good.
not the
worst.
It is quite good. It was different before we came, because
Completely
there was
different.
A overall majority for Labour.
What's the city level like?
Labour with Green Party.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that makes sense for you.
It's like overall in Austria, the Labour Party isn't that in the best position anymore.
They're on a downward slide.
There are issues there.
And in Austria, like on more on the countryside, outside of Vienna, it's more conservative.
Yeah.
I don't think they think political on this level. What I find really important, and what NEO's changed quite a lot, and the Green Party, to be fair, they brought in younger people.
Yeah.
Like you two, which have a different view on the world. Or I think if you have a seat in a council for 25 years, you will do what you've ever done.
Yeah.
Getting a new view on things might be a little difficult.
That's what I found so weird when I started in the district council. There were people, members in the district council, that were working there for a longer amount of time than I was alive. And that's just, I can't get my head around
that.
How is that possible?
That's the same with me. I mean, I'm the youngest person that's ever been elected to Brandon Forest Council.
Mm-hmm.
The next youngest person is more than 15 years older than me.
Mm.
You know, and if you go after them, you're jumping another, you know, almost another generation. And the vast majority of them, you know, the average age of the council is in the sort of late 50s.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the councils are above that. They're in their...
And probably most men.
Mostly men, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a bad example of that because my party representation on there is 100% male because it's just me.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that we tried in our campaign in the local elections to invite younger people in, because even though councils traditionally in the UK tend to be, you know,
mm-hmm.
older people, we sort of said, well, no, actually, younger people, it's not that they don't want to get involved in their communities, because I speak to so many fantastic people
mm-hmm.
that do. It's just that the system at the moment, how it looks, you look at the council, what it looks like, that doesn't look representative of the kind
yeah.
of issues that we're looking at. And I talked to you guys on the way from the station about somewhere in my ward called Hazel Hill. And it's a place that I hold quite special in my heart, because I speak to so many young people from Hazel Hill, and you know, it's been ignored and all this stuff in the past. But when I speak to the young people there, I talk to them about what is your kind of concern, and they're talking about, you know, there aren't a good number of apprenticeships in the community to get them into work, and they're worried about, you know, does antisocial behaviour in our community draw them in at that? And actually, they are very aware of what's going on in the community. They keep an eye on not, you know, the nitty gritty of what the council is doing,
mm-hmm.
but they have this awareness and they do want to get involved. And when I do some volunteering things, when I do my cleanups in the
mm-hmm.
community, it's young people that come and help.
Yeah.
But often the council isn't reflective of that group of people in our
mm-hmm.
in our community. So yeah, I don't know if that's what
mm-hmm.
you found as well.
Is it hard for you to be taken seriously by the other council members, especially because you're young?
At the start? Absolutely.
Mm.
You know, some of the things that they would say about me on social media
mm.
in the election campaign, you know, they would say he doesn't know what he's talking about,
mm-hmm.
you know, he has no idea about local government, you know, he's not going to be able to make these big decisions, he's all this kind of stuff. But I think the way they've seen me do my campaign, so I did a big campaign on streetlights, which I'm sure you've seen
mm.
me go on about
yeah.
on Twitter all the time. I think through that they saw that actually I'm quite serious about, you know, not just the rhetoric, trying to get into the detail, trying to get things solved. I think I'm slowly convincing them that I actually, you know, do have an understanding of what's going on. But there is always that thing of, you know, the way it's just some of the language they use towards me as well. You can just say, okay, they're taking me as if I'm on a level below them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's difficult. It's not all the members, it's just some of them, that, especially ones
yeah.
that have been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They think, you know, what's this young guy doing here?
We've always done
it like that.
Yeah. And so that's quite difficult, especially
mm-hmm.
as the leadership of the main party has been in place for decades.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think the leader of the council has been leader of the council since before I was born. So it is difficult to be taken seriously. But the thing that keeps me going is the people in my community who
mm-hmm.
know me, they absolutely take me seriously
mm-hmm.
and they treat me as if I'm any other person on that council, and they will, you know, place that expectation on me as if I was any of the others, and that's what keeps me
yeah.
going, because at the end of the day I'm not really too bothered about what the other councillors think of me. I'm worried about, you know, how I'm coming across to folks in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a local Facebook page called We Love Bracknell,
mm-hmm.
and that's where sort of all the local discussions happen, and the way that people talk about me on there, when I see that, I think, you know,
mm-hmm.
these people have not just, they don't think, oh, it's that young person on the council, they're actually quite serious, and you know, they place that responsibility on me as if I was
mm-hmm.
anyone else.
What I want to say is, because people probably won't know Bracknell in Austria,
yeah.
Bracknell is quite close to London, it's very commutable to London.
Yeah, it's about an hour on the train.
Yeah.
It, Bracknell is what we call a new town. So after the Second World War, London's masses needed somewhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so Bracknell was a brand new town. There are similar ones, Milton Keynes, people may, I don't know. It was a new town built after the war. And Bracknell Forest, the area I live in, which is a bit wider than just the town of Bracknell, includes Sandhurst, where the Royal Military Academy is, Crowthorne, which is a sort of village. And then we've got all the different communities in Bracknell. And then at the top, we've got Warfield, Wingfield and Ascot, which is where there's a quite famous race course.
Yeah, we were talking about it in the week. It's the one with the hats.
Yes, absolutely. So it's a really interesting community. There are parts of it that date back a really long time. So we've got South Hill Park Arts Centre, which Oscar Wilde used to frequent.
Okay.
So Bracknell's got this history, but a lot of it is a new town. And so a lot of the buildings are sort of the 60s, 70s. And so a lot of people don't know it because it's not within the Greater London area or anything like that, but it sits in that place where it's sort of, everyone just assumes it's within part of London. And also we have Reading, where we are today, which is a much bigger town that's much more well known near it. So when anyone asks me where I'm from, I'm just like, near Reading.
Yeah. But Bracknell was recognised quite in our news a couple of months ago when the MP of Bracknell joined the Lib Dems from the Conservatives.
Indeed.
Yeah. I was watching TV and I was like, yes!
Bracknell was on the news for that. And it is interesting because it's a town where not a lot of people pay attention to it nationally. And then all of a sudden it's on the news and I see people on Twitter tweeting about Bracknell and I just think, you've got no idea about Bracknell. And all these people are suddenly experts on Bracknell and its politics. And I just think, no, that's not right.
But a funny story on the side is that one of our Austrian NEOS MPs, she was doing a NEOS at home evening near where we live, and I picked her up to drive her there, and she said, I'm not sure if I'm on time because I'm just coming straight back from London. I was like, what are you doing? What were you doing there? And she was like, it wasn't actually in London, it was near London. And I was like, okay, where was that? Because I had a feeling. And she said, yeah, it's the time you will know it. And I was like, try it. And she's like, yeah, Bracknell. And I was like, I know that. And she works for a big computer firm.
Okay.
So that's why she's staying there.
There's a couple of, so I can place it down to one or two.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, it's a small world, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is. It really is.
And we were saying actually on the way here, I have a friend who I have a friend in Austria called Manuel, and he just happens to live in your district.
Yeah.
And
you know what to tell him for the next election.
Oh, absolutely. I always tell him, literally every election in Austria, I'm like, look, I have friends over in Austria that work near us. You know, you've got to vote for him. But he does. He's liberally minded, like me.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I just, it's such a small world, isn't it? That I would knock on the door of your mum,
yeah,
and my friend lives in your district.
It's actually a little weird.
Lovely.
Yeah. At some point, you have to tell us where he lives.
Yeah.
And then we go door knocking.
I always say, you know, if NEOS come to your door, you've just got to say to them, 100% going to vote for you. Because, I've walked around parts of your district when I went there, and it's a nice place near Gasometer.
But sometimes it reminds me a little of Bracknell, because a little, like before the renovation of the town centre.
Yeah.
Because it was like, I think it was a brand new town in the like 60s, 70s, and high end new town square. Wasn't that in the end? And if that's a big story we have to tell in Vienna or in our district, because we have a shopping street that has the same problem. And some ideas I think are really good, and I think it's done Bracknell a lot.
Yeah, and one of the funny things is the town centre is something that everyone from outside of Bracknell talks about.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it fascinating because I represent the town centre as part. So I represent Wild Ridings, the estate, and the town centre. And I would knock on all these doors in the town centre in Wild Ridings, and it wasn't even something they thought about, honestly.
Really?
Because when you live with it, you know, people have just come used to the old town. But the Conservative manifesto for the local elections was all just, look at the town centre. But folks in my ward, I say most deprived ward in the town, and it was mainly just because of they had bigger fish to fry, or they, because now Bracknell's town as you say, it looks very nice, it's lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
But it's a bit higher end than it used to be.
It's more expensive, and so
a lot of folks, there used to be a lot of independent shops, a lot of local business that's moved away. And so, actually, to people in my community, it's more of a, I like it, but I wouldn't shop there, kind of thing. And I mean, when I go to the town, you know, I might, if I'm going out for a meal or something, I might go there. But the shops themselves, I can't say I'm in that level of sort of thing where I would go shopping in a lot of those. But it has done a lot of good for changing the image of the town and...
And jobs, probably.
Yeah. So, you know, that those have both been very positive impacts.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about trying to make sure we look after the other end, which is, you know, those folks have kind of pushed away from that a bit. How do we do that? And one of the things about Bracknell that's really interesting, and I'm not sure if it's the same in your district, the way that Bracknell's built, it's built around having distinct communities that have their own community centre, school, small neighbourhood shopping area, and there's loads of those. So we've got East Hampstead, Birch Hill, Hamworth, Wild Ridings, you know, they're all sort of spaced out and around. And because the focus has moved so much into the main town, some of those neighbourhood shopping areas, like my one in Wild Ridings, have just gone to, you know, they've just kind of been ignored a little bit. And it's a challenge about sort of how do you encourage anyone to go into that sort of place when actually you've got this brand new town that's sort of...
Yeah.
And we had the Queen visit the town as well.
Really?
To do the opening sort of ceremony for
Did you meet the Queen?
I didn't meet the Queen. No. I'm not important enough to meet the Queen. But, you know, there's all this hype around Bracknell. It has television advertising now. And it's the change in reputation over the past 10 years from Bracknell has been unbelievable.
Mm.
From being a town where people would say, oh, avoid Bracknell, to like, oh, yeah, look, Bracknell's got this lovely sort of shopping area and it's got lots of nice restaurants and things. But then I look at my neighbourhood shopping centre and I think, we've still got some work to do.
Yeah, but isn't the problem with Bracknell, as we talked about before, that it's so easy commutable to London, that house prices went crazy around the station area where it's easy to go to London, and all the people who used to live there just went out. There's now the difference between people having good London jobs moved out on the country and the people who used to live there.
Yeah, and actually this is an issue I care really deeply about, because I think of people in my generation, and I think about, you know, I want them to stay in Bracknell because we've got so many great people in our community. Like, you know, one of the things that always astounds me when I go and talk to people is how many amazing young people there are in that community. It looks pretty bleak, honestly, because you look at the price of housing and the price of rent. I mean, it's difficult to stay in Bracknell. And I see a lot of my friends, once they finish university, they'll move elsewhere and go and take a job elsewhere. And that's really difficult as a town because... Whilst, yes, it's great for people who own their house, the house prices are going up. For folks in their younger generation, and we're not building enough affordable housing.
Mm.
So the definition in Britain of affordable housing is so loose. It can include all sorts of things that require massive deposits and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not building enough, and we're not building them quick enough. And the thing is that we are losing a lot of people to places like Andover is somewhere that, you know, there are more houses available, they're cheaper because it's less close to London, people go there. Even more locally, Newbury, you know, they're building more houses there and they're cheaper than Bracknell because it's further away from London, so we're seeing people move there. And it is one of those things that I do think about a lot, is what's this going to look like in 10 years' time? Am I still going to be able to afford to continue living in Bracknell? Because the house prices do seem to just keep going and going. And I speak to my nan and granddad about this. They moved in, I talked about Bracknell being a new town. They moved into a community called Harmonswater, literally when it was built in the 50s, and it was just, that was it. And I was talking to them about what house prices were like back when they were moving in. And you think, wow, I wish it was like that now. Because now their house, even though it's a pretty standard 50s house, it's probably in the sort of 300,000-400,000 range. You just think, who can afford that? You know, and then every stop you get closer to London, so if you went to Ascot, Sunningdale, Virginia, you know, all the things that you would pass on your way here, the price just keeps going up and up and up.
And then there's one special house that's for sale.
Oh yeah, the Harry Potter house, Privet Drive number 4.
that's in your area, right? Martin's Heron is it
it's in Martin's Heron, yes.
Yeah.
And that's quite popular with people.
So are you the counselor of Harry Potter?
No, so mine's
just say yes.
I'll say yes, but mine's Harry is just outside my ward boundary.
We don't have that.
But yeah, Harry Potter's one of my residents.
So I have the second question for you now. But we got, yeah. Which people and or experiences had a significant impact on your life?
One of the conversations I had, this is a recent one, it's a small one, now we're going to a big one, but I was doing some door knocking in a street called Fountains Garth over in Wild Ridings, and I was talking to someone about the environment and how I think that, you know, we need to do more locally. And she said, and this really did throw me for six, she said, well, what are you doing? You know, and I just thought, that's a great question, because at that point I was still driving to some of the meetings, and I was, you know, maybe I was preaching, but I wasn't doing my own bit. And so now I've said, do you know what? I'm going to start cycling to meetings. I'm going to be more environmentally conscious. I've got LED bulbs in my flat now. And it was really just someone questioning me that changed my mind on that little thing. So it happens all the time. But in terms of bigger, you know, what changed you, your perspective on things, kind of thing, I'm just trying to think of an experience that really did that. There have been lots. I think one of the biggest ones for me, when I was in secondary school, which is sort of our year 7 to 11, I did there was this sort of ceremony that was a citizenship ceremony, so people that were coming to Britain, I was asked to give a speech on why I love Britain, and you know, as a kid in secondary school, I was like, I don't know, but the reason that was quite eye-opening for me and it really changed me a lot is because I got to meet these folks and hear their stories about people that were coming to Bracknell, and I always thought when I was a kid, I was like, why would anyone come to Bracknell to live? You know, that's such a weird thing to do. But then speaking to them and hearing about other people's experiences, I think that helped open me up a bit more to maybe I should do more of this, you know, and it's not just about what I think about the world, because actually there are lots of good stories out there that people have to tell, and that citizenship ceremony and seeing how much it meant to them, you know, something that I thought was so trivial, like, you know, oh, you just coming to Bracknell and coming to live, what's all that about? But to see how much it meant to them was sort of, for me, like a, hang on a minute, actually these things are really important. These people that, you know, sometimes get demonised in the media and things, actually they are people that have stories to tell, and they actually really want to make a positive contribution. And so for me that was like, okay, maybe I should look at things in a slightly different way.
That's why you see that what we take for granted, having a citizenship in the country where we live, being able to do whatever we want in the, like, or
in legal.
Yeah. But yeah, you can go to vote, you can get elected, you can say your opinion openly and freely, all these freedoms we have that not everybody has. It's like sometimes good to think about that it's not for everybody.
Yeah, and it's about access to services as well. So when I was talking to these people, they were saying, oh, I can access this now, I can do this now. And for us in Britain, we just think, yeah, we just whack our national insurance number into something and we get whatever that service is, or we get treated in a particular way. But I was thinking, these people literally don't have access to that until they get to that point. And like I say, with voting as well, it's something that a lot of us take for granted, but there are people that would absolutely love to have that opportunity. Especially the thing that gets to me is I was talking about my friend, so we were talking about my best coffee rivals, my friend Tom is from the Netherlands, and he, you know, he's someone that moved to this country more than a decade ago. He's paid his council tax, pays his income tax, pays national insurance, and yet in this election that we're about to have, and in the European election, you know, he didn't have that opportunity to express his view. He gets to vote in the local election. But when it's all these kind of national things, and in the Brexit referendum and things like that.
He wasn't allowed to vote in the Brexit referendum?
No, EU citizens weren't allowed to vote. Because he hasn't changed his citizenship. But actually, changing your citizenship involves a lot. You know, you've got to give up all the benefits
it's
you have.
It's an emotional thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's kind of a big part of who you are, you know.
Especially if you have a European citizenship and you get another European one, it's not a big of a change, because we will hopefully be allowed to stay and work and wherever. Not say the bad word here. but if you come from further away, where it means that it changes your life completely, because you know you will always be allowed to stay here. That's, I think, something different.
And that's where the citizenship ceremony got to me, because it was mainly people from
you know, particularly African countries.
Yeah.
And I spoke to a lot of people from, there was a family from Ghana who were there, and being able to speak to them and say, you know, how different things were, actually what their journey was to get
mm-hmm.
here. It means a lot to them because they don't have freedom of movement and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So to get the whole family across, you know, it's not just a thing of you just go to Britain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to do all the preparation. How are we going to, you know, how are we going to make sure we get all the forms up? Is everyone's visa going to get
mm-hmm.
accepted? Because the Home Office here have a tendency to say three of you yes and reject one application,
mm-hmm.
things like that. That was really eye-opening for me.
Mm-hmm.
And like you say, it is about when people come from, and this will be interesting to know what happens going forward, you know, after certain events may or may not happen. just to know, you know, because it is such an emotional process and it is a really difficult process for a lot of people to know what that's going to be like for folks that live in Belgium or France.
Mm-hmm.
The next big question for you, and that is, what are you proud of?
Well, I mean, I could do the obvious one of, you know, being the youngest councillor elected
yeah.
to Crown Forest Council. One of the things I am proud of is that I managed to, so I graduated from university very recently. I'm proud in a way that I managed to get a degree in the way that I did, because I found university really difficult in terms of, so as I said earlier, I don't drink alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So in the UK is sort of university culture, that's
yeah.
what it's about. And so one of the things I'm proud of is that I managed to keep myself going and,
mm-hmm.
and find friends and just keep motivated through that difficult 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of that, I work here.
Mm-hmm.
And I got placement as part of university and I managed to land a job and those kind of things. Because that path isn't a normal path for folks
mm-hmm.
in my family. My sister was the first one in our family to ever go to university, and I was the second. But, you know, when I speak to my nan and granddad, who, you know, he worked at a chemical plant and she sort of worked at a shop later in her life, you know, that was it. And when I look at my parents, my mum works in social care, my dad was a mechanic. So I've managed to forge a path for myself
yeah.
that's sort of different, and
mm-hmm.
it's been through, you get those days where you just need to convince yourself to keep going sort of thing. But it's been through that and the really supportive people I've had around me, so I'm proud of where I've managed to get so far. I hope I keep
mm-hmm.
on that path, but it is something that is not normal for my family, so.
You should be proud of that.
Mm.
And Bristol is a great, I think I love Bristol. It's very different from a lot of cities I know in the UK.
There's a lot going on. It's very alternative, Bristol.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very alternative. There's a lot of different, really distinct communities in Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
Like St. Paul's has its carnival, and it has quite a Caribbean community. So you
mm-hmm.
get to find a lot of cool stuff there. And then you go to other places like Clifton, which is up where the big suspension bridge is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've just got a totally different place, but it's within the same city, and it just looks different. It feels different. The people
mm-hmm.
are different. And I like that about Bristol. It's so diverse
yeah.
and so mixed, yeah.
And it's this path, so.
It
yeah, I really need to go to both places. I would just do a road tour or something, like
they're
a train tour.
It's not too far away from here, actually.
Yeah, no.
Oh.
It's an hour on a train.
There's a Reading train. It goes to Bath, and the next stop is Bristol. So.
So I have the last question in that part, and it's, what makes you laugh?
I tend to laugh at really kind of silly jokes, but I do like stand-up, you know,
mm-hmm.
stand-up comedy. We have some local shows in Wokingham that I go and watch,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know, I just like people who, I like kind of more dry humour, but
mm-hmm.
when they just pick fun at sort of, when they're not trying to tell a joke necessarily in terms of like it's really set up and everything,
mm-hmm.
but when they're just picking fun at day-to-day life,
yeah.
I like laughing at, you know, some of the things that happen day-to-day, and
mm-hmm.
I'm the kind of person that, you know, if I were to trip up and drop something, I wouldn't be distraught about it. I'd just laugh about it because, you know, some of these things that just kind of happen. And when I'm driving a lot of the time, I feel this, you know, when you come across stuff that's just really silly, or if you steal your car or something, you know, I laugh at that because I just take fun in sort of the weird, wonderful things
yeah.
that happen day to day.
Sorry. I think you need that when you work in politics.
You really do.
You really do.
And sometimes there are bizarre things, like, you know, I could have a door-knocking conversation
mm-hmm.
with someone, and, you know, they can just be hurling all sorts of insults
mm-hmm.
my way. But afterwards, you can just kind of laugh to yourself about it and think, what on earth was that all about?
Yeah.
Did that actually just happen? I love that kind of stuff. Where you kind of see something and you just think, was that real? Did that actually happen?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the great stories I got, actually, I went on an Interrail tour
mm-hmm.
in 2016 with my friends. And we went to Innsbruck in Austria. And we got off the train. And there's this guy walking down the high street, right? Like
mm-hmm.
the main street in
yeah.
Innsbruck.
Yeah.
Dressed as a clown. But he's not looking friendly. You know, like a, you know, playing with the kids, doing the,
yeah.
It was terrifying. Like, this guy is gonna, and I was just watching it with my friends, and I was like, is that really happening right now? Is that a thing?
Do all of you see this?
Yeah, like, what? But I love that kind of stuff. Just the weird and wonderful things that you see day to day, and I just love sort of taking the mick out and laughing at that kind of stuff.
That's a good approach to life.
Yeah. What was the funniest door to door experience for you?
Oh, good question.
Oh. Well, one of the ones that everyone in my local party talks about is once when we were in Sandhurst, this guy opened the door in, a dressing gown.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite a windy day.
Ah.
And that was one particular story. But the funniest one that I can think of that I've had is, I knocked on this door. This was on the election day. So I knocked on a door in Rosedale Gardens, and this lady had a house cat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not, you know, that's where you have the cat that stays in, it doesn't come
mm-hmm.
out. She opens the door to speak to me, and I can see this cat in the background sort of walking around, and the cat obviously thought, right, this is my opportunity, went for it. And this cat ran out the door, and so I find myself on an election day running after this lady's cat with her, and then trying to, like, you know, grab the cat, get it back in, and then we got the cat back in, right, the house, she puts the little gate thing, and then it comes out a second time, I kid you not. So twice on election day, I'm just asking this lady if she's going to go out and vote. Should have been a real quick conversation. And I've spent about 15 minutes chasing our cat through Rosedale Gardens trying to get it back in. And I just thought, oh, goodness, you know, that's what it's become.
So, Cassandra, what's your best door-to-door story?
Yeah, it's quite similar to the first one you said. Because,
I think it was
the first time we went door-to-door campaigning,
mm-hmm.
or one of the first times. And I was knocking on somebody's door, and that very young, quite attractive guy opened the door, and all that he was dressed in was like very tight boxer shorts, and he was brushing his teeth. And I was just standing there going, hi, the election, here, leaflet, vote, thanks. It wasn't quite fun. In retrospective, it was really funny, but at that moment, I really would love to see my face in that moment, because it was like, look in his eyes.
Yeah. But really, it's so funny, the amount of people open doors in the underwear.
It doesn't happen so much to me,
really?
I don't know.
But I think it's because you have, like, the houses, and
yeah.
so you don't go, like, you don't open your house door. Maybe it has something to do with the temperature, as you mentioned before. Because
I guess also, a lot of mine is houses. So if you're
yeah.
opening your door, you're opening yourself to the world,
yeah.
the street.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're
and
in
you're
a flat,
just...
you're opening your door to the corridor and you're not really that bothered.
I think
yeah.
the
only time it's happened to me is in blocks of flats. So
yeah.
maybe that is
yeah.
that is the case.
Yeah. I think what I like most about it, and you said it before, when you do door knocking in the area you live, you come as a neighbor,
mm.
and it's like, let's do something together. And I think I always thought door knocking people would be so annoyed,
mm-hmm.
but really people are so happy to see you to
yeah.
be able to talk to somebody sometimes.
Yeah, and I think that's becoming more of a thing in politics, that people feel very disconnected from
yeah.
you
mm-hmm.
know, be that their members of parliament, be that their councillors,
mm-hmm.
they feel really disconnected because the rhetoric and the politics takes over. But actually, when you get someone in front of you on the door, it does actually create that connection. And I, one of the things that I'm really happy with is the number of connections I've been able to make in my community.
Yeah.
And I can knock on people's doors now and I can say things, you know, I remember people and I can say, how's your son doing at school, kind of thing, because
mm-hmm.
if I knew they were struggling or having difficulty. And one of the things, actually, one of my stories that I've had recently is I send out these letters when people move into the community, because when people come in, they register to vote, and then I get a notification once a month that these are your new residents.
Really?
Yeah. It might just be that they've registered to vote and they're not
mm.
new, so my letter doesn't make much sense, but I send out a letter to everyone that I personally sign all of them that says, you know, welcome, this is what our community is about, look forward to seeing you. And then I give them key contacts for, you know, local services. And I remember I was, they're knocking on doors in a place near the Downshire Way, which is a big road in our district. This guy came up to me and he said, "Councillor Parker, hello." And I was just like, "Who is this guy?" And he said, "I got your letter, you know." And I sat down and spoke to him, and he was a Romanian guy that had come, and he said, "I was really worried moving at a time, you know, in the time running Brexit, because he'd come across with his family, and he was just worried that people were going to see him as Romanian and think, you know, all these nasty things that you hear about in the news." And he was like, "Your letter just made me feel that I was welcome, even though I hadn't met anyone in the community yet." That was really special to me, because I thought, you know what, something that I'm doing that's quite small, and when I'm writing those letters, I honestly think, "Oh God, why am I doing this?" But then when you actually get to see the effect it has on someone, you know, I was coming to him as his neighbour, he knew who I was before I properly met him. And now, you know, when I go past that area and if I see him again, I think, you know, "Oh, I wonder how his son's settling into the local school. I wonder if he's been able to get, you know, his paperwork sorted for this and that." And I think that's what it's all about. And if you can make that difference, if you can focus on the people that live within your sort of district rather than it being about the politics, that's when it becomes much more personal. I think that was one of the things that helped me in my election campaign, is that anyone that spoke to me on the doorstep knew that I wasn't in it because, you know, I mean I really did want the Lib Dems to get a seat, but that wasn't the main reason I was there. It was because, you know, I do care about the people in my community, and I love speaking to people, and that's why I think door knocking's great, because you get that insight that you would never get otherwise. And yeah, just being able to hear about what's going on in their corner of the world.
We're at the end of our conversation, which is a shame because it was very, very interesting. And I just have to say, I don't think that ever happened that three liberal politicians are on a table and didn't say the bad word with the B, especially being in...
especially having an election in the UK next week.
That's very impressive, the bad word.
I think that is on brand for me. I mean, one of the things that's really interesting about my ward is that it voted 70% leave. So it makes no sense as to why I was elected. But it's because of that local thing. And I think actually the thing about the B word is that a lot of folks, that there's this perception that it is this massively divisive thing in terms of if people are on different sides are going to hate each other. But a lot of the time, you speak to people and they don't actually know exactly which side of the fence they sit on. They've got their concerns. They, you know, and when you talk to them about, "Well, actually, we should probably compromise and think about this," oftentimes they're more worried about, you know, "Why isn't my bin getting collected on a Tuesday morning? What's happening here?" So it's one of these things that everyone talks about, and the media focuses on it so much. But I think if you actually talk to people in the real world, you know, you get a very different perception about what their daily challenges are and what's on the top of their mind rather than what they're seeing on the news.
I think we could do probably another 5 podcasts on that topic, but for now, is there anything you would like to share with our listeners, or where can people find what you're doing, you're working
on?
So
they can find me on Twitter at ThomasParker75. But they can also find me on Facebook, which is Councillor Thomas Parker, with the council being CLLR. And that's a really good way to see the kind of work I'm doing locally and the kind of things that are involved in being a British council member, and also being a sort of lone liberal on the council, the kind of things I talk about. And actually, often on those platforms, I like to connect with people. I talked earlier about, you know, liking to hear other people's opinions, and I can sit on a doorstep talking to someone that's a UKIP voter and still gain an insight from them. And so actually I would love to hear from any of your listeners that have got similar or different views on things, or if they've got ideas about you know, what they think is important in local government, those kind of things. I'd love to hear from them and hear what they say.
As always, we'll put all the contact information, Twitter, Facebook, in our blog and in the show notes and on Facebook and wherever you can find us, they will find you.
And I have the last question and last thing to say. Thank you very much for taking your time off. I know you have elections next week, but you have exams on Monday.
Yeah, I've got 6 hours of exams on Monday. Oh, I am looking forward to it. But then this has been a nice break from that. You know, I really appreciate you both coming and talking to me. It's been great to chat to you both and hear some of the differences, some of the similarities. And also, very nice to meet you at last. It's one of these things that is amazing with social media, how you can connect with someone and basically know them, but you've never actually met them before. So yeah, it's just been a really good experience.
Yeah, it was really nice. I think it was really motivating because sometimes it's, I think working on a local level is like, do people see that it's important and I'm passionate about it and I love it, and people think you're a little crazy that you do it, but at some point it's very good that you hear other people saying the same thing and that you're on the right track. So great work, thank you very much. And my last question is, how do you drink your coffee now?
I don't have any sugar. That's like, you know, I'd be bounced off the walls if I did that, but I do have a little bit of milk.